Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Somewhere in the future, a man from the past,
find the cloud and kill him,
is all that stands between life and death.
There simply isn't enough energy on the planet to take down the shield without killing us all.
The world is dying, McCloud. The shield has to come down.
Greetings, Highlander. You cold?
Let's have some fun.
Remember, you called me. Just remember, but quickly.
It sounds like magic.
Well, it is, kind of.
Christopher Lambert, Sean Connery, Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Hello and welcome to Smirch Pod Royale, a podcast celebrating all the Bond films and Bond-related films by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Raine. This week we'll be gaslighting an entire generation of Scottish immortals and telling them they come from space. Yes! It's Highlander 2, The Quickening. And joining me to try not to lose our heads, or indeed try to understand just what the fuck is going on, is actor, comedian, enigma, professional Welshman, and possible immortal, because he's Welsh, Dan Thomas.
Hi, good morning. And I'm just going to say, happy birthday, John.
Thank you, Dan.
We said it off air, but I want everyone to know that you have taken time out on your special day to do this.
I had to, because it's a much a present as anything else to talk about Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Yeah.
And it's the first one back. I haven't done one for a few months. So
this is obviously the first one back after the book.
After the book, yeah.
Finished. Oh. You know, this is a new lease of life for you. It's your birthday. You know, it's new year, new you. Old book finished.
Yeah.
Old you. I don't know. But
I'll be in the club with 50 Cent.
Yeah. Again, talking about Highlander 2 with him, and he's like, who's this guy?
But, yeah. He won't know what I'm talking about. He'll be calling me Shorty for some reason. Despite the fact that I'm 6 foot tall.
Are you 6 foot?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What about with your head off?
Oh, my head off, probably about 3 foot.
It's a big head.
It's a big head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wear hats.
Tall. No.
Yeah. I've got sort of the opposite problem to Nicholas Lyndhurst, that he's got a small head. But he's quite long. He's quite long, though.
Yeah. I've seen him with a stovepipe hat on, and it just sort of sinks down to his neck.
I mean, yeah, you could definitely put him in the background of any sort of Tim Burton animation, and he wouldn't look out of place.
Yeah, true. Oh. God, this is turned into a real Nicholas Lyndhurst bash for no reason.
Well, I think we're subconsciously trying anything not to talk about Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Okay, all right, well, it's not a long film, so there's that.
No. The version we watched isn't.
We should say which version we're watching, yeah.
We watched the theatrical release.
Yeah.
Which is butchered to shit.
But well, they say that.
They say that, but I think they had to make it watchable.
I don't even know how. I haven't seen the, what is it, Renegade.
The Renegade cut.
What a prick thing to call it. But his Renegade version of it. I will do. But this is the one that I wanted to see, because this is the one that everyone, that is passed in a legend as being one of the worst films ever and an absolute betrayal of the first film.
Yeah, it's possibly it's the worst sequel because of that, I think. That it completely retcons the first film entirely.
Yeah, but it doesn't even retcon it. It just, because it doesn't make sense within the context of the first one.
No, it's true.
It figures, yeah, but it basically retcons all the information from, like, the back of the VHS box. Like, that minor bit of information, you go, yeah. Oh, that'll do. This is, because we've done a lot of films where it's like, it feels like a sequel that was made by people who didn't like or understand the original.
Mm.
And that's very much true of this one.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it loses, and we'll get there, but it loses coherence during the film. This is a film made by people who didn't even watch the first half of this film.
Yes. Yes, it is. And it's surprising because it's the same director.
Yeah.
So you'd think he'd be a bit like, hang on, lads, I'm Russell Mackay from Australia. And this makes Mackay, whatever you say. I can't remember.
Okay, no, Russell Mackay was the guard from the Australian remake of Porridge.
That's right, yeah. Now listen here, Fletcher. You've ruined the first film. but yeah, even the director should have said, hang on, you know, what's all this about?
Did he have much of a career after? He must have had a decent... This is only 5 years after the first Highlander. It's not like he was broke.
I think he dropped off. I mean, the last thing I saw him do, and I haven't checked, you know, a lot, but the last thing I saw him do was a Resident Evil sequel.
Okay, but that's relatively recently. But doing the Highlander 1 and this, he must have had a couple of jobs.
I don't know. He was music video director, wasn't he? He did that Duran Duran Wild Boys video phase.
He did, yeah, yeah.
But he also did, before that, or during that, a rather good Australian horror film called Razorback.
Yes.
About a giant killer warthog.
Which I've never seen, but I remember it being one of those ones that BBC Two used to put on late at night with, like, Alex Cox doing a little introduction to it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's visually beautiful, much like all his films are. This film looks good, I think, in places. Yeah, it's got the Ridley Scott tropes and the, you know, the fans with lights coming through them. Thing that we
had. It's got that. Well, since we're doing this now, right? I love Blade Runner, right? And I can see that they were going for that, but there was a lot of this looks like if they did Blade Runner the musical, Highlander 2 looks like the touring version.
Yes.
Of so if you were like the Torquay, like Alhambra, this is what their Blade Runner would look like. It would look like Highlander 2. Because the thing is, the sets are all right, but they've only hired five extras sometimes. So it looks like what it is, the inside of a warehouse. It looks like a laser dome sometimes.
It does. It really does.
But I can see what they're going for, and it's a considerably limited budget and limited not skills of the crew, but there wasn't much of it because it was made in Argentina because it was cheap, and they found out why pretty quick because there wasn't really an Argentinian film industry anymore.
No, they had to invent one,
and they didn't have the equipment. They didn't have, you know, I'm not saying the crew didn't work hard. I'm just saying that they didn't have the skills you might have if you'd gone to your Pinewood, your Shepparton. So it suffers because of that visually.
Yeah, it's funny. It reminds me in a similar way of what they did with Total Recall, because they shot that in Mexico, and it was a similar problem where they had to, you know, really push it because there wasn't really the skills there. But that came out really well.
That had a bigger budget. I don't know if anyone got ill on Highlander 2, but everyone did end up with the shits on Total Recall.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Arnie shat out Quato, and they used it
in the film. Don't mop that up. We're going to glue it to him and save ourselves a fortune. What?
Open your mind. That's what he said last time. but talking of laser zones quests, we start in August 1999, and the ozone layer is continuing to disintegrate.
Yeah.
Because that's what we were interested in the early 90s.
Yeah.
The fact the ozone layer was going. So what do you do in that specific scenario? You hire a doctor called Alan Naiman.
Yeah.
The day we protected the planet from the sun. And
I love that. There, straight away, we've got this. We'll remember this day forever. The day, as you know, we are protecting the planet from the sun. I know, I work here. What's wrong with you? What do you give me the synopsis for, dickhead?
Then, who else do you hire? An art dealer, yeah. So you go and hire the bloke who runs an antique shop and remembers when Coronation Street started.
This was, I do have it here, like, was this originally a Lovejoy movie?
Make more sense.
He slightly dresses like Lovejoy a bit later as well.
Yeah, and one of the people he kills looks a bit like Eric. And you could say Katana could be played by Tinker. Much better film.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're celebrating all this science, and what happens is they shoot this laser up into the, and they basically make a shield around the Earth.
Yeah.
But with the one downside being that this ruins McCloud's immortal power, so he starts aging. Yeah.
I thought he starts aging because he killed the Kurgan in the first one.
Oh yeah, you're right. I thought it was because of the sun. Never mind. You might be right. You're probably right. In fact,
I think he stops being mortal, so he just starts aging. He goes, well, if I'm going to die one day, I might as well go out the art dealer business, even though I'm doing very well, if you remember from the first
doing
one.
Doing very well, yeah.
So in 10 short years, I'm going to go from being an art dealer to the saviour of humanity.
Not bad. It's almost like Trump.
Yeah, yeah, in a way. Hmm.
Hi, I'm Connor McCloud. Read my book, The Art of the Deal. These steaks are only available from Russell Nash Antique Shops.
Come on down to McCloud University. We're going to make you rich. Don't lose your head with business.
Nice. You will be rich forever with my Bonnie Heather aftershave. But no, that's not what happens. So they've saved humanity, but 25 years later, the shield is condemning the planet, so no one can see the sky, the stars, or the sunlight.
Yeah.
As well as it being really hot.
I tell you what I love, so just to be clear, it's 25 years. It's just been this sort of layer instead of the ozone for 25 years. Mm. And we cut to a weather report.
Yeah.
And it's like the weather is exactly the same as it's been for the last 25
it's
years.
It's basically Scorchio from the first year.
It's Scorchio.
Yeah. With Paula Vish. There is still a shield. Back to the studio. So presumably this means it doesn't rain.
No, it doesn't rain.
That's not good for crops and such.
And it's not good if you want to copy the Blade Runner look either.
No, exactly. No. So he's having a miserable time. So he goes to the opera. And also people hate him as well. But he goes to the opera first, I think.
First thing he does is go to the opera.
And then we get the first instance of, fuck, this film makes no sense, bringing someone to do a voiceover, which in this case is Sean Connery.
Yeah, doing his Rising Sun voice. Yes. Go high, yeah. Remember, yeah. You were born in another galaxy. What? What?
Rising Sun 2, where it turns out Wesley Snipes was born in another galaxy. Yeah.
You're not from round here, you racist. No, no, I mean, none of us are. We're from another planet. Where's this come from? Just read the script.
You know, when you saw those shoes, did you also notice they're a pair of moon boots?
Yeah, from space. It all comes together.
But he's falling asleep at the opera, and then we get Connery going, he basically goes, hello, remember me? We're from another planet, remember?
Right, okay, who saw Force One? Right, one, two, three. Some of you did, right? Okay, this is my new Connery impression. Right, so some of you saw. If you, Kanzapu enjoyed or remembers Highlander, right, most of you, fuck. Mm. All right, try and put that out of your mind, because now we're going to do something a little bit different and run VT, and then we're on the planet Zeist.
500 years ago. What I love about this is that I'll let you into a secret, folks at home. What I used to do with films when I watched them for this podcast is I'd write, you know, really a lot of notes while I was watching it. But now, because I'm old and rich and I don't care anymore, one of those isn't true. Two of them. I get the Wikipedia plot synopsis and then build notes on top of that. I find it saves time. But what I like about this is the guy, person, lady, man, who wrote the plot synopsis on Wikipedia is equally as frustrated with this as we are, because the passage starts immediately with roughly 500 years before the film takes place on the planet Zeist, a last meeting is held between the members of a rebellion against the corrupt leadership and the ruthless General Katana. And then we meet again Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez.
Which, by the way, is his name.
Yeah. Why was
on Zeist.
On Zeist.
Is that his name on Zeist as well?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I was going to say. So it's like my... And McCloud, they call McCloud. So, so they're a rebellion against Katana, and their punishment is that they have to go and be... they have to live forever on Earth.
Yeah, I was thinking this. Is that a punishment? You are punished. It's like you've murdered... You know, you've tried to overthrow, you know, the Senate in January the 6th, and they said, your punishment is you're going to go to a nice planet and live forever. Oh, yeah. Cheers.
Yeah. And you hear Katana going, these freaking priests. I mean, I've paraphrased him, but he blames the priests who apparently are judge and jury and nutters, apparently. But so everyone's got their actual Earth names. First, we'll skim past the fact that 500 years ago is not enough time because, like, we already know that Sean Connery's character was alive for like 2,000 years, wasn't
he? That's right.
When we meet in the first one.
Yeah.
MacLeod is from the 12th century, Scotland. Anyway, but they haven't watched the first one.
No,
they didn't have time.
No.
If you're writing a script, you can't be wasting an hour and a half watching the original.
You probably had the shits.
Yeah, probably had the shits. Right. So, but I mean, it blows my mind that they're on Earth with their real, with their names. Like, they must have gone, right, we're going to have to make sure that we send you to a part of Earth where they've got names that sound a little bit like yours now. Otherwise, it's just going to be confusing. You're going to go to Egypt. You're going to go to Scotland. Right, what's your name? Kevin Webber. Right, we're sending you to Swindon. Hello, people of Swindon. I'm from the planet Zeiston. My name is Kevin Webber.
Oh, nice to meet you.
And I cannot die. I cannot die.
And you, Ford Prefect. it's just a bit weird. It would have taken a second just to change their names to, like, Quarboss. And Swordwin, and like you are being sent to Earth, and then when they get to Earth, they then adopted these names. You know, or they were born, reborn on Earth, and they're given those names. That would make more sense. But to have those names on Zeist makes zero sense.
No, good.
But we're told that Connor MacLeod. Well, first of all, Ramirez says, you know, we have to, have this rebellion, and everyone's like, well, who will lead us? You? And he goes, no, I cannot lead you. We need a man of great destiny.
and then he swings his sword in a way that, as I think I mentioned to you, is in a way, because it's quite a big heavy sword, and he could be wielding it quite strongly, but he's just gone, I'm not fucking up my wrist with this shit
when
I've got
wrist.
A 3 o'clock is my swinging wrist, and I don't even mean that as a metaphor, you pervert. Okay, I'm not busting my wrist. I've got a 3 o'clock tea
with Jimmy Tarbuck.
I've thrown Jimmy Tarbuck out to Argentina because I missed the boy.
And he's got the shits.
So I'm up. He's beat me the last 3 times, but I reckon if he's squirting them out, I'm going to have a chance.
But so he needs them to lead in his katana. Ramirez then uses the quickening, which we are told in the first film happens when you decapitate somebody, and says it's a kind of magic.
Yeah. God.
He says, is this magic? And he goes, kind of. No. So they then have an attack, as you said, as you mentioned earlier, they get crushed, and then they're put on trial, and they're told that they're going to go live on Earth forever, and the survivor, and they will have to fight each other to be the only one.
Yeah, well, none of this makes sense.
No.
Well, what this means is, presumably, so the Kurgan, who's the bad guy, who's a proper nasty bit of work in the first one, he must have been part of the rebellion. He's been sent to Earth.
Yeah.
And now he's like, you know what? You were all right till you moved to Inverness, and now you're a fucking prick.
It's the proper heel turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like when Hulk Hogan became Hollywood Hogan. But surely, I mean, I know Michael Ironside at this point was on a tour of duty being baddies, and he's a very steady pair of hands as a baddie. He's very good at it. But wouldn't it have just made more sense to get the Kurgan back? Considering this is 500 years in the past,
I've read a lot of trivia around this, but I feel like they offered him maybe a cameo in it,
right?
And then he turned it down
for SpongeBob.
Yeah, for SpongeBob. Yeah,
yeah. And then as they're leaving, Ramirez says to him, "If you need me, Hollander, just call out my name."
Yeah, that's a terrible.
Really awful. Thing.
What, need you for anything? Like, it was just if I die, I'll come back. You just have to summon me by calling my name. Just sitting there, match day. Just go. Oh, God, can't be asked to go to the fridge. Ramirez. Oh fucking hell! It's 10 feet away. I'm dead.
Well, I was thinking, what if he accidentally says it during a high-profile business meeting?
What if there's another guy called Ramirez?
Yeah, I'm going to have to call you Rami.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing, but every time I say that name, a man appears.
It's just like, oh, for crying out loud. Just call me. I was just about to have a game of golf with Ronnie Corbett, Des O'Connor, and Tom O'Connor from Crosswich. You remember. I'll get you a beer, you fucking French arsehole.
I'm Scottish.
Oh, that's right. I'm Scottish.
So then MacLeod wakes up at the opera. Someone comes up to him and goes, oi, you old fuck. It finished hours ago. I'm trying to clear up. What are you doing?
Also, he's got old man makeup on, which is, unfortunately, he looks exactly the age he actually is, but after a burning incident.
He looks like, you know, at the end of RoboCop when that guy goes in the toxic sludge?
Yeah.
He looks like his dad.
Yeah.
So then we cut back to Zeist, and Katana's annoyed about the decision. The Wikipedia goes into more detail than the film here. It says...
doesn't that just tell you everything?
Yeah, it goes, Katana is unsatisfied with the decision, leading to the events of the original film.
Right.
Doesn't though, does it?
Hi there. I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
Hi, I'm DeLon Grant.
And I'm Francesca Ramsey, and together we host the podcast Lemme Fix It.
Each week, we explore something from the past, and then we pitch how to fix it for today.
But forget about the past. Let's talk about the new show of the moment. DeLon, did you get a chance to watch the new Queenie trailer I sent you?
How dare you send me this amazing show that took me back to every messy breakup I've ever had. Thank God I had you through my 20s.
Now, you could not pay me to go back and relive those days, but thankfully, we will be living as Queenie navigators. It's her messy 20s.
All episodes of Queenie premiere June 7th, streaming on Hulu.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/spoken today.
We meet Louise Marcus. Who is played by Virginia Madsen.
Madsen, yeah. Mm. At her peak.
At her peak. She came and went very quickly.
Yeah.
Fair to say. Was this in Candyman? Was that about it?
I feel like she's had a late career bloom playing senators and judges.
Oh, okay. All right.
But at the time, I saw her in something before this that was a Tommy Lee Jones noir ghost movie.
Oh, right.
That's the only thing. I can't remember what it's called. Kill Me Again or something like that. Yeah. So I've seen her in three things.
Well, she's part of a sort of saboteur movement.
Yeah.
Who are basically the shield generator that's operating to keep the world safe. They're convinced that it's not needed anymore. They're basically anti-shielders. They think it's pumping 5G into everyone.
Yeah.
So they're going to try and blow it up. And they go there and they try and blow it up and it fails. And the group is called Cobalt. They attack the shield. The shield is now controlled by the Shield Corporation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the chief executive, David Blake, played by...
John C. McGinley.
Yes. Who is having a lot of fun in this, I think.
I read a fact about him when I was going through the trivia. He goes, He tried to do, to deepen his voice so he sounded like Orson Welles.
Right.
And later said that was a mistake. Oh. And I'm like, he sounds like John C. McGinley to me.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm just, no difference whatsoever.
No difference whatsoever. Okay.
There's one point later where he changes his voice, but that's for a specific reason.
Oh yeah, yeah. And he doesn't sound nothing like Orson Welles.
He doesn't, though. Meanwhile, Connor has gone to a cafe that's got, as you say, two people in it.
Yeah, but it's quite nice art direction. I can imagine if you were the art director, you turn up on set and goes, "This would look good if you hadn't fucked it."
Mm. And if you put more than three people in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the jukebox is playing It's a Kind of Magic.
I bet that's the most valuable thing they did in the first film was paying Queen for a buyout on the music, because this film could never have afforded a Queen soundtrack without that deal.
No. Did you see who did the music to this film, by the way?
I didn't. Stuart. Is it the Proclaimers or?
No, Stuart Copeland from The Police.
My name is Stuart Copeland, and I did the music for the second Highlander film.
Just the score, though? Are there any original songs in this?
No. Oh, there's a couple of sort of rock songs, aren't there? But I didn't do too much digging.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's at the cafe, and there's a thing on the TV about the shield, and a lady in the cafe approaches him and says, "You piece of shit, you ruined the sky." And he's like, we should mention McLeod. Christophe Lambert has taken the decision to have McLeod as an old man sound like he's, like, drunk a pint of bees. He's like, "I don't know what you're talking about."
Like, I think he thinks he's doing Dustin Hoffman in Little Big Men, but he's just doing John Thompson in, like, "I'm a very old man."
Yeah. 5 hours in makeup. So she smashes a bottle on him.
Yeah.
And then as he's sort of recovering, Virginia...
I'll say this, she's wonderfully cast. She's only... There's one scene, she's got a couple of lines, but she actually has this really great sort of downtrodden, grotesque quality that is good for the role. There's lots of little details that, like, if they all came together, this would have been a really interesting film. Mm. And it is an interesting film because it's so awful.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not good.
No, but it reminds me, with the set and her in particular, it reminds me of Little Shop of Horrors, like she's going to start singing, "Down on Skid Row."
Yeah, that's the thing. It has got this, all the cars are old, so it has got this future retro sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know if that's just because they were in Argentina and all the cars were still from the 60s.
I think possibly. I mean, they're still looking for Nazis at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. One of them might be in it. So he gets attacked by the woman. Then he meets Virginia Madsen, and she asks him for his help in taking down the shield.
Before that, she gets to him when she's been at the shield earlier. She's fallen into a dam. She's soaked.
Oh yeah.
She gets she's got a bag, and out of it, just out of the bag, she's got a scrap of paper with McLeod's address, just ripped off an envelope. It's like, this is the most important thing you have to be able to track down McLeod. You could have memorized it. You could have written on something other than a scrap of printer paper. I'll tell you that, because you know you're going diving tonight.
Yeah.
It just looked like, does anyone, like the prop department went, "We didn't make anything. Just write it down on this bit of paper and fuck off.
Laminate it at least."
Yeah, something like that. But it's just, do you want to keep it safe? Nah, just bang it in the umbro. Just bang it in the umbro. It'll keep anything out this umbro.
Well, I take it swimming with me all the time. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Fine.
I put my cozy in there afterwards. Nothing gets ruined.
Hey, don't worry. I'll save humanity. I've got the umbro.
This podcast is sponsored by Umbro.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she asks McLeod's help to take down the shield, and he says no. And he says he's dying and that he doesn't approve of terrorism.
Right.
Yeah. So there's some good information there.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back on Zeist, Katana, who's been sitting up there for 500 years.
And has chosen tonight.
Tonight, of all nights, to go...
Wait a minute. Also, if it's 500 years, why is he still alive? Because they're like, on Earth, you'll be immortal.
Yeah.
Also here, you're also immortal.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the point of any of this is.
No, I'm really not. No. And he says, well, I think it's probably about time we killed McLeod. So he sends his two henchmen, Corda and Reno, who look both like hedgehogs, and go, their tongue out all the time.
I've written steampunk Proclaimers.
Yes, I'd go with that. They would wait 500 years.
And then go, they're just the really irritating henchmen characters.
So annoying.
Yeah.
So then, as they get transported back to Earth, McLeod's giving Marcus, so you can imagine, a lift. And then has an orgasm. He goes, "Ugh!" I'm not sure why. I think it's a quickening thing.
It's a quick name because when because he's no longer the only immortal type on Earth, so he's their energy makes him, you know, his like pre-quickening sort of vibe.
But then he talks like he's in a Japanese animation because you know they have to fit the English words into the mouth and they talk very quickly. He says something like, "Ramirez, my friend, come and help me."
What's his name? Katana has sent these steampunk claimers down because he said he's decided that he's worried that MacLeod will try and come back to Zeist.
Yeah, why?
But I've written down, but there's no mechanic for that. When we see him get shot down, they get shot down in like a beam of light with a machine on Zeist. He can't, like, he's not going like Gatwick one to Zeist, please.
He's not like, building
he's
a ladder.
No way of coming back. He's not building a ladder. Like a Lumiere Brothers thing.
Yeah. It's like it's like a load of ladders gaffer taped up.
Yeah. I'll get you. Well, can somebody hold this?
I just need three more ladders to reach Zeist. But my hobbycraft is sold out of them.
Okay, good. But he's... It's just... Oh, God. And this is what I'm talking about. It's like no one has written this having seen the first bit of the film.
No, they've just thought, what motivation could Katana suddenly have 500 years down the line to think, I need to kill them? Him. What it should be is that he finds out about... what's he called? The Kurgan being killed. But there's no motivation because he'll just die on Earth. So
the Kurgan was my mother.
Yeah, the Kurgan was my sister's dad. My dad as well, obviously. Yeah, something like that. So these two come down and then they start bullying him because he is an old man.
They start bullying him.
They do. They start calling him names and they've got flying skateboards.
Oh, yeah, I forgot this was the era of the flying skateboard. Mm. Every film had a flying skateboard for a while.
It's the same one for Masters of the Universe, I think.
It's Masters of the Universe. It's this. It's Back to the Future 2. Mm. Then we have a bit of a break for 20 years, and then Jupiter Ascending does it. But this was the golden age of the flying skateboard action scene.
It was also one of them's got wings, but the wings are specifically designed to make it look like he's on a big string and going back and forth. Like you've punched a model airplane and it's just swinging back and forth.
It does look terrible.
It's awful. But he manages to decapitate one by pushing him off a train and the train goes over his neck.
Which is a bit of luck.
Yeah. So that gives him a quickening. And because it's the quickening, it means that every building within a mile radius blows its windows out.
Yeah. None of this makes sense. Why is everything... that's my note, yeah. Mm. Why is everything blowing up, please? Mm-hmm. This isn't stuff we've been told before. Like, if he keeps on beheading people from Zeist, he becomes immortal again and things explode. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem sustainable.
Not really. No. But he kills the other one as well by chopping his head off.
So what happens is he's got his sword. Mm. He ties a cable around it while the second proclaimer is flying towards him.
Yeah.
And he pulls it tight-ish. Mm. But it's supposed to look, I guess, like he's like chopped his head off. But it is quite a thick cable, and it doesn't look like it's chopped off. It looks like it's yanked off.
It's
just a terrible, terrible scene. The head looks like it was Velcroed on.
Yeah. And there's a couple of cool touches in this, though, I did like. With the train, when it bursts through, the explosion has got a little almost Rolling Stones-esque...
That's right, yeah.
...painted on the front, which is quite... I remember being quite iconic at the time when you saw clips of it. And also, when there's a massive explosion after the second death of the Proclaimer brother, Virginia Madsen, who had to hide in a bin, pokes her head out and is like, oh, God, and then he just walks out of the flames all young and sexy again.
Yeah.
And that was quite cool, I thought.
Yeah, he looks like it's pre-T-1000, I guess, when they were making this, but he's got that cool look. There's moments of coolness to this film. It's just generally awful.
Oh, yeah. It's because you've got a music video director who's got a good eye that you occasionally get good little visual things. But you can't... I mean, it's literally just putting a cherry on a dog shit.
Really. If anyone gets a chance to watch the making of, which is called Seduced by Argentina, there's a lot of them going, look, they didn't have halogen lights in the whole of Argentina. Like, the main problem they would say of this film is that somebody decided to make it in Argentina for very little money without checking or not whether that was feasible.
Yeah.
But they do seem to blame a lot of stuff on that. Like, yeah. The government screwed them out of money, and they were like, "Yeah, you had to shoot a lot in the morning because lunchtime they'd be going, okay, let's go have lunch, and the crew would go off, and their lunch was 3 bottles of wine." Mm. I was like, "Okay," but the crew weren't writing the script.
No,
although
that is the problem.
Checks out. Yeah,
after 3 bottles of wine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. What's the word you just said when you fell over and bit your tongue? Zeist. Write that down.
Zeist, that sounds like, again, a Nazi's hiding there.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Tell the line, Zeist. So, but when he experiences the quickening, he just shouts, Ramirez! And then, meanwhile, we cut to Glencoe, Scotland, which is apparently, according to Wikipedia, the location of his death in the first film.
Okay.
And there's an open-air production of Hamlet. And Ramirez materialises alive and well. And when the actor's doing the to be or not to be, or was it I knew him, you know, he was a joke, you know, that bit.
Yeah, it's the skull bit. Yorick scene. Yeah. The skull bit, yeah.
Yeah, the skull bit.
I'm going to say one thing here. And just agree or disagree. I'm curious. I think here Connery, in this scene specifically, has the worst dialogue of his career, until maybe the Avengers, but I think possibly of all time.
Yes.
This is the worst dialogue he's ever had to utter in a single scene.
Also, I totally agree with you, by the way. Also, his character is utterly redundant in this film.
Yeah.
He does nothing. The same things would have happened. Was he not?
The backers were just like, "Well, you have to have Connery in it." And he's like, "All right, fine."
Oh, God.
And Connery said, I've got 6 days and you've got $3.5 million. Let's see if we can make this work.
But this is the bit where the actor says to him, get off the stage, you shithead.
Yeah, shithead. What's a shithead? Yeah. And he does a weird thing, which is he doesn't know he's in a play. Like, why? Yeah, how can you not know? Look around, there's a fucking crowd, you belly. The thing is, and I've never said this before, I don't like Connery in this.
No.
I don't like, but Ramirez in the original is a great character. In this, because it's just the lines he's got, and also it feels like at the start of every shot Connery's in, you can see him, somebody passing him another check.
Yeah.
You know, it totally feels like a cash job for him. I looked it up. Yeah. There's no decent golf courses anywhere nearby, so there wasn't even that for him.
Oh, God. Right?
So he's giving the dialogue. For the first time, I feel like he's not even giving the best performance he can, because usually he's a pro, and in this one, it just feels like he's sleepwalking through it.
Oh,
which
absolutely.
Is still quite engaging because it's Sean Connery, but it's, you know, 60%.
Yeah. And that's end of part one of this episode of Smirshpod. We'll be back later in the week with part two. So please stick around. But in the meantime, why not like, subscribe, review, enjoy, share, tell everybody you like. And, you know, why not even buy Thunderbook? Hey, why not? See you next time.
Hello, I'm Tom, and I make a podcast where I log in to celebrities' Amazon accounts. It's called...
What a brilliant idea for a pod. There's no original pods out there anymore, but this genuinely is.
Oh, thanks, Ben Bailey-Smith. Anyway, it's called...
This is good, isn't it? It's clever, this podcast. You should do more.
Thanks, Kerry Godleyman. It's called...
This is such a great idea, by the way. What great podcast.
Shappy Corsander, you're too kind. The podcast is called...
It's biographical. You can get all sorts of information out of people. This is a very good idea.
Thank you, Nick Helm. It's called My Mate Bought a Toaster.
I'm going to listen to this podcast.
Thanks, Alex Horn. Can you tell your friends?
Great Big Owl.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.